I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Brizzy Atlantic. We are your hosts, web designer Ross Barber
and singer-songwriter Marcy Novelli.
This week we are joined by New York-based independent singer-songwriter Ron Pope. Ron has released 4 albums independently, and his music can be heard on shows including The Vampire Diaries, 90210, and So You Think You Can Dance. Ron's currently working on a new album, and we're excited to hear about his experience as an independent musician and what's coming up. Hey, Ron, how's it going?
Hey.
I'm great, fellas. Thanks for having me.
No worries. How's that cell phone working as an internet connection right now doing for you?
So far, so good. All of the internet is apparently down in Brooklyn. So,
oh,
like I said, yeah, everybody that's like, you know, making like artisanal candles that smell like ostrich eggs and stuff, like all that ridiculous nonsense that gets created in Brooklyn, they're without internet right now. So.
Well, I don't think you're going to be getting any sponsorship or licensing deals from those guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Ron, right off the bat, tell us 3 things about yourself that everyone should know.
I am not Dr. Dre. I would say that's the first thing. I'm not Dr. Dre.
Wow. Well, I mean, you learn something every day, really. So.
That's one. I'm not Dr. Dre.
Breaking the news on Bridgie Atlantic here.
Yeah, that's because sometimes you look at us and you're like, oh, my God, is that Dr. Dre? And I'm like, no, please. please. I'm not Dr. Dre. I am not a reggae artist either. No reggae at all. No reggae to speak of. And I really like pasta. 3 things. 3 very interesting things that I have never said in an interview.
Can you say that again, the last thing? Just say the word.
I like
pasta?
Pasta.
I say pasta.
Pasta.
Pasta? You say pasta or pasta?
Pasta.
Yeah, there we go. Pasta. Some people say pasta. I know people. That
yeah,
say
I know,
pasta.
Marcio. Thanks for bringing that up again.
No, actually, yeah, it's actually
Marcio always
my
gets
wife's
me
side
to
of the family,
words.
Who's from London, England. They say pasta. Pasta.
Because that's the right way.
Oh,
but anyway,
is it? Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so Ron, we're going to go back in time a little bit. Not actually back in time, because
that would be awesome.
That would be cool.
That would be awesome.
And we want to talk a little bit about A Drop in the Ocean. Obviously, big, big hit on YouTube. And then the season 1 winner of The Voice ended up releasing it as their first single. How did that happen?
So, so the song is kind of... So I put out A Drop in the Ocean in 2005. And then it became a giant thing all over the internet. So it wasn't just YouTube. At first it was on MySpace, and then it was YouTube. And I mean, now it has, I don't know, like 35 million plays on Spotify, stuff like that. So it's kind of everywhere. And on iTunes, I mean, I've sold over 1 million copies of it. It's just, you know, kind of been a great big thing. And so everything with that song has been incredibly organic, as with everything else in my career. It's, you know, all of the licenses that I've gotten for television have been very, you know, relationship-based. A person who likes my music, they'll know somebody who is the person who picks the music for a show. And they'll say, oh, you know, in the same way that if you heard a song, you might call a friend and say, hey, or write them on Facebook and say, hey, I heard this song you'd like. Well, that has happened with television placements. You know, someone will say, oh, you work on that television show. Well, I bet you would like this song. And so all of that stuff happened very organically. And then I had a deal with the label that you get, you win a record deal with if you win The Voice. And so I think that's how they became aware of the song. And so that's how it was recorded. So did by you have Javier Colon, who's a great artist.
So did you have a licensing deal prior to this, or did you end up getting a licensing deal because of this?
Yeah, no licensing deal.
Really?
The television stuff has come from me. All of the placements, like every time you have ever heard my songs placed on television, it's been just, you know, somebody heard it through a friend or something along those lines. Like the guy who used to put the music on 90210, his daughter heard the music and she liked it, and then she shared it with him. So stuff
like
that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool, and that's why we invited you on the show, because I've listened to your music for a couple of years, and we tweeted each other actually when your most recent album came out. I remember tweeting you to say that I was really enjoying it, and you tweeted back. And yeah, so that's why I thought to invite you on the show. And you've done so much. You've released 4 independent albums, and you have 145 singles on iTunes.
I've released 11 independent albums, actually.
Something's wrong.
A few of those are live albums, though, right?
Studio albums. Let's do it. Because I'm not sure. So there's the first record that I made is. I'm in a group called The District, and it used to be a group that just performed my songs. And it was just me singing. And now it's different. So I won't count the records that I've made with them since we've changed it to something different. But when it was just a group that was me singing the songs, we made 2 full-length albums with them. And then I made Daylight, which is my first studio full-length album. That's 3. And then next is the New England Sessions. And that's another one. And we made the Whatever It Takes one. There's that one. That's 5. Atlanta is 6. Calling Off the Dogs is 7. 26 Tuesdays, which is a project that I did. That's like for 26 weeks, I released a new single. And then I ended up releasing them as 2 full-length albums and an EP. That's 10, and that's not including like EPs and live records and stuff like that. So yeah, man, and that's not including. I've also made 2 records with The District. The new version of The District is me and 5 other guys who are all songwriters, and we take turns singing lead and we switch instruments. It's kind of like the band.
I love it.
So not even counting that. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I'm kind of addicted to creating content, so we make a lot of content.
Apparently, as we can see. Sorry, we got that number off. We have to contact our team of researchers.
Yeah, which would be me.
Yes.
Which
sorry.
We run.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know myself off the top of my head. You saw that I had to count
exactly.
on my fingers. So I'm in the process. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, please, you keep going.
Okay, I'm now in the process of finishing the next record.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. So that's perfect.
So perfectly.
Yeah, tell us about it, please. I believe you've been recording on the road, actually.
So I was on tour for about 9 months, like pretty much continuously last year. I don't think I was home for any more than 6 days in a row or something like that.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And so in October, I had a tour booked that was 10 dates in the U.S. And so I got together it's like my dream team of musicians. All the guys in New York who I have always wanted to be on tour with, but for varying reasons, I couldn't get them all together. And for some reason, it just kind of became this incredibly fortuitous thing where everything fell together and everybody came out on the road. And so we started with 2 weeks in a house in Georgia and kind of literally going back to my roots so that we could figuratively go back to my roots. So my last album, Calling Off the Dogs, was very experimental. There's lots, you know, from a compositional standpoint, from a production standpoint, all of it, it's very much, crazy key changes and tempo changes and songs that are written with movements like classical pieces, and there's big orchestral arrangements and electronic stuff and, you know, crazy sonic landscape stuff. So it's really like quite a journey. And I decided that once I got this group of guys together, I started writing songs. They all can really sing, all the guys in my new band. And so I decided I would start writing songs, you know, just to see if I could write some stuff that felt good with a giant harmony stack, you know, kind of begin, you know, it turned into a very rootsy thing automatically because I just started writing these songs for a big group of people to sing. And so then we started in a house in Georgia for 2 weeks before the tour, and we started recording there and hanging out there and rehearsing because I could never get everyone all together till that 2 weeks before the tour. So I just transplanted them all from New York and then locked them in this house, basically. So we ended up, we recorded all of the shows on the tour. My buddy Ted Young, who's a Grammy Award winning engineer and incredible dude, he engineered my last album. And so I said to him, I was like, hey man, do you want to come on tour with us? And, you know, asking a guy who's a studio engineer to go on tour, you know, that's not what they do, you know? So I expected him to say, you know, I'm used to being in a climate-controlled environment all day. And instead he was like, you want to go on tour? Hell yeah, I want to go on tour. Where could my bunk be? Let's go. And so he came on the road, and so we recorded all of the show, like, super hi-fi. And then back in New York, we've been back in the studio finishing the records. So at this point, we've recorded a ton of stuff, and I think we're probably going to do a handful more, just like a couple more days in the studio, and then we'll be done. And then I think it'll probably come out next year. That's my guess.
That's exciting, man. What sort of? I know you said your last one was a lot more experimental. I know you're going back to your roots here, but what could you say is the new direction that you're going if you had to really pin it down?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a lot of great big harmonies on it. I would say it's something like, you know, there's something very American about everything in the record. It's like big harmonies, like electric guitars. All the instruments on the record are real.
Cool.
Like, instead of my last album, we had, you know, stacks of synthesizers to the ceiling. And on this album, the keyboard player only plays Hammond organ, a Rhodes, a piano, and an accordion, and that's it, as an example. Like, it's much more organic and rootsy kind of than what I have been doing the last couple of years.
And that sounds really exciting, actually. And I think it's important as an artist to keep treading different water, too. You know what I mean? And not just staying in one route.
Yeah, I would say you have to go wherever the muse takes you. You know, if you want to make... If you want your next record to sound like this record, mazel tov. Do what
it's
you want
true.
To do.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, inspiration took me to this place. Getting this incredible group of musicians on board for the tour just inspired me to start writing music for this group. So it turned. I didn't plan on making another album so quickly. I kind of thought that I would, you know, take a while and you know, take some time off. But that's not what happened.
Well, you can't really plan life sometimes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Ever. What sort of advice would you have about referring to writing and recording on the road? Because here's some artists doing that, but I can't imagine it's the easiest thing to do, particularly to record on the road. Like, I guess it depends on your setup, though, right?
I think that writing on the road is much harder than recording
really?
On the road. Because you don't have any time. Mm-hmm. Like, on this tour, for instance... You know, we were in a bus, and so you go to sleep in the bus, you wake up in the morning, and you're in front of the venue, you load your stuff in, you know, you set up, it takes forever to set everything up. You have sound check in the afternoon, it's, you know, and then you're like trying to take a shower, you're trying to get ready. For me, I have to do press and stuff like that, and then mm-hmm. before you know it, it's time to do the meet and greet, and then you go on stage, and then you get the gear out of the venue, get back in the bus, go to the next city. So it's hard to write on the road because you're always busy. Recording, I think, is considerably easy if you have access to the resources. You know, for us, like, we rented two Pro Tools rigs that we ran in tandem, so we had a real-time backup. of the show. I mean, and you know, so some of these things are a luxury. Like I was able to bring, we brought a front of house engineer, a monitor engineer, and then independent of them, we also had a recording engineer recording the show. We brought all our own mics and all our own cables and all our own stands. And so that if you can control it that much, then it's easy. You know, it's just like being in a studio, only there's people yelling. Otherwise, it's a studio. And that's really fun because you get the energy of a live performance. And that's something that, you know, in the studio, you're creating your music in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And so for this tour, it was really exciting to take these brand new songs that no one had ever heard before and then play them in front of people.
So obviously we've talked about recording on the road, but what kind of advice would you give to other musicians who would want to make a living independently in a similar kind of way as you've managed to do for the past, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years?
Yeah, 10 years. 15 years ago, I was, in high school.
Yeah, Ross, careful.
Sorry, careful. My research.
He's about my age, so be nice.
It would be awesome if I was doing this 15 years ago. They were still paying people money to make music.
There you go.
There used to be a time, basically every point before the digital age in the music industry, there was a person between you and worldwide distribution. So there used to be the haves and the have-nots in the music industry. And the haves were people with major label deals. They were, you know, the Rolling Stones, where you had access to worldwide distribution, so your record could be in stores, and so people all over the world could get it. You had the money through a record label to hire a producer, to go into a studio, to spend time making an album. You had access to the means of promotion and all of that. And then there were the have-nots, and those are people who were like playing in the bars, and they were trying to get discovered. And one of the things that's happened over the years, first of all, the distribution process has been democratized to an extent, because you can go, you know, sign up with a company like TuneCore, which is who distributes my music, and for I don't even know how much it costs. I believe it's like less than $100 an album. You can have them distribute your music. You take that, you know, you give them a record, they'll take it and they'll put it on iTunes and Spotify. And so every place that you can buy a Beyonce album or, you know, stream a Beyonce album, you could make a record in your bedroom today and have it distributed there. And so that democratizing the process in that way, and then also the recording process has been democratized, in a much, you know, like in unbelievable ways. You can buy a great condenser microphone now for, you know, $200, and you can use the computer that you have for school and, you know, plug a microphone into it and make a record in your bedroom. And so, and make a pretty hi-fi, pretty good sounding record by yourself with your computer and like a MIDI controller and a microphone. And so that's a kind of incredible thing. So what happened is by all of these things becoming possible, it's taken out the person that is between the artist and putting out the record. There used to be an A&R guy who had to stake his life on you. He had to say, I believe in this band. I think we need to sign them. Let's spend a bunch of money on this. I think that this person can make the record label money eventually or whatever. And now that person is gone. And so no one has asked the question of, should I do this? No one says, should I put out this record? Like, is what I am doing good? That is a question that I think is neglected too often. And so my advice to independent artists or to any artist creating any kind of art is this. Just because you can point a camera at yourself and make a 15-second clip of you singing a cover song or whatever, you know, or singing your own songs, doesn't necessarily mean that you should do that. Just because you can does not mean that you should.
I just said this recently as well.
And so I think that you have to think about, you know, take time to develop your craft. Like, yes, when I was a teenager, I was writing songs and they were bad. All
you
of
me
them.
Both. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And, And
you had to go through that to get to the point where you could write A Drop in the Ocean. You know what I mean?
Or whatever. Yeah, it's a process. And, you know, some people are magical and, you know, can write great songs when they're teenagers and people, you know, Ben Queller did that. Taylor Swift had incredible success as a teenager, et cetera. But those people are exceptions, and that's why I could think of them and mention them. You know, they're the exception that proves the rule. And so not that I'm saying that it matters your age, because, you know, maybe you picked up the guitar when you were 27.
Exactly.
You know, what I just think that everybody needs to self-assess a lot more in the digital era. And so you have to think, is what I am doing good? Like, is this good? Because it never goes away.
All right. So are you ready for 20 questions again, Ron?
Let's go for it.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Meat or veggies?
Veggies.
CD or vinyl?
Vinyl.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Canada or Scotland?
Scotland.
Twitter or Facebook?
I was just kidding, by the way. Both. Facebook.
New York or Atlanta?
Both.
Breaking Bad or Homeland?
Neither.
Eek! Indie or major?
Major.
Bruce Springsteen or Bruce Willis?
Springsteen.
Football or baseball?
Baseball.
Friends or Seinfeld?
Neither.
Eek again. Simon or Garfunkel?
Garfunkel.
Yeah. The Voice or American Idol?
Neither.
I'm with you on that, brother. Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Michael Bolton.
Because you wrote a song together.
Yeah, because we wrote a song together. I mean, I love Michael Jackson, of course. Everybody with ears loves Michael Jackson. But, Bolton has a
special
place there.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's the bolt. He's awesome. He's got the power grab and everything. The hair,
He's got short hair.
He does have short hair. So he doesn't have that going for him anymore. But
the power grab again.
He's still awesome. We're gonna get him on the show. Every episode is a plea to Michael Bolton.
Is it okay? It's you, Ross.
Twerk or work?
Work.
Ricky Gervais or Ricky Martin?
Ricky Gervais.
Whale or kale?
Kale.
That's because you know what's up. You know what's good for you, man. Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Bette Midler.
And finally, drum roll.
Big question. Ross or Marcio? Or neither?
Neither.
I like that better than the first time we did it. Actually, that's more fun.
Both.
Hey, man, that's the first time we've actually, just to our listeners and viewers, it's the first time we've ever actually had a problem with 20 questions. We did it once and we completely lost it. So thank you so much for being a good sport and doing that again with us, Ron. That was it was still fun the second time.
Yeah, but getting the internet to come out of my cell phone has been
exactly
a journey.
Yeah,
it has been. But hey, it's a pleasure to be just chatting with you. So,
well, thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, before you go, we would just like to ask, is there any music recommendations you have? What's been spinning on your probably metaphorical record player these days? Unless you are still a vinyl guy.
You know, I do keep a record player, and I have a bunch of vinyl.
Oh, I'm jealous.
But I mean, it's hard because while vinyl is really cool, you have to be actively listening. Because, you know, every 20 minutes you have to turn it over unless you have one of those turntables that does it itself, and I don't. So,
Do you light artisanal, like, candles while you put on record player while riding your one gear bike?
Yeah, exactly. I'm riding around on my fixie.
So what have you been listening to?
Checked out that Sturgill, I don't know how you say his name, okay. Simpson.
Okay.
The modern country that his record, or like what modern, was it Modern Sound? I forget what it's called now. Let me look.
No. Check it out.
He's Sturgill Simpson. I'm gonna look right now, and I'm gonna tell you the name of the record. It's like modern, it's like a play on that Charles, play on that Ray Charles record, I guess. You know, his sounds were like, his record was called like Modern Sounds in Country Music or something. And so it's like, look, I'll tell you, I'm gonna use the internet.
See, okay, it's whatever, internet, man. I don't think it's going anywhere.
I don't know how. It's one of those fads. It'll pass.
I mean, I know the internet told us that you released 4 independent albums.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know,
so
how wrong was
lies.
That?
Secrets and lies. That's all that the internet's about. Actually, it is. It's actually true. Secrets and lies.
Sturgill Simpson's record is called Metamodern Sounds in Country Music. So the last couple of days I've been listening to that, and it's super rad. I've been listening to that a bunch. I mean, I listen to a lot of old music. Like a lot of my music is very old. Like in the last year, I definitely have been listening to a lot of things like from the end of the 60s and the beginning of the 70s. Like I listened to Blonde on Blonde the other day. I listen to Exile on Main Street like once a week, usually. Sticky Fingers, like most of Bruce's stuff from the 70s. You know, like I like classic rock a lot, but yeah, I think I don't know. Like my taste is pretty broad, so I kind of do all sorts of things. Like last year, I couldn't stop listening to Haim. I listened to that Haim record like just like a crazy person. So I like all sorts of stuff.
Awesome.
I'm a music guy.
Apparently.
The best way to be.
You've only released a couple singles in your day, you know what I mean? But you'll get there, man. You'll get there.
People who make music tend to like all kinds of music. Like people always want to ask, do you have any guilty pleasures? Well, no, because I think all music is equally valid.
Nice.
Like, you know, Chuck Berry only had one number one song, and it was My Ding-a-ling. You know that? Like, you know that song?
I didn't actually know that.
Chuck Berry had.
That's crazy.
And you know what? Chuck Berry plays that song, and he loves to play that song, and it makes him happy to play that damn song, so he plays it. And that song has probably made a lot of people happy. And that's my take on that.
Awesome. So tell everyone where they can find you online if they want to check out your music and stuff.
RonPopeMusic.com and Twitter is RonPopeMusic, right, brother? I know you got to go, so we're going to say thank you so much for being on, and hopefully you'll come back soon, and it'll be less troublesome this time, or next time.
Thanks
so much, brother. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bridge the Atlantic. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes.
You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, so connect with us on there and let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for being awesome, and we'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.